This is Anime Afterlife Podcast, Episode 6. I'm your host, Dave the Zombie, and we have our co-host, Vincito.
Woo!
And our manga specialist, King of Arts.
Yo.
And our other co-host, Raccoon Boy.
I just farted.
Cool. Great. And our guest this week is Akana.
Hello.
Hello.
Alright, and let's get to this week's news.
Yeah, does anyone have anything they want to talk about really quick? I'm pretty sure Zekana told me he had something he wanted to say for news-wise.
Yeah, let me start off. For anyone who reads Berserk or enjoyed the anime, there's actually going to be a new anime adaptation of Berserk. Don't really know what it is yet, but hopefully it's a continuation after the Eclipse arc, where the original anime left off.
Well, didn't the original anime leave on a cliffhanger anyway?
Yeah, and by far the greatest and most disturbing cliffhanger ever.
Well, it's probably going to be it then. It would make sense. Yeah. I mean, a total reboot would be stupid.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Berserk does sound pretty cool. I've heard like a lot of good things from other people.
Yeah, believe me. If you like action with substance, Berserk is one of the best mangas you can read.
So it's basically something that Dave would never like in his entire life.
What?
Dave, you're just not the action type of guy.
Yes, all I you, am.
You oh, yeah, like me. Your billions of romances.
Come back to your romances, Dave.
You guys are mean.
Whatever. Does anyone else have anything else they want to bring
up? Actually, you have news for one.
Oh, hooray. Well, you got to see.
They've been doing some surveys and some, you know, just a little recon, and they're thinking about making an Otome game and trying to bring that out in America, actually. So, I don't know. I think it would fail, but...
Wait, a game based on what?
Do you guys know what an Otome game is?
No clue.
Is that some dating sim?
Yeah, it's the dating sim, but it's from the girl's perspective.
Oh, the girl Soros?
What?
Wait, what?
No. I said from the girl's perspective.
Now I get it. Yeah, now that
so it's a dating game, but it's from the female point of view. A Tony game.
Girls waiting to get hit on?
I guess so.
I think it would be more like those bi shonen the games with the guys who are perfect in every way for some reason.
And Axis, also known as the people who Blaze Blue, are the ones who are trying to make this. Yeah.
Well, if it's by Blaze Blue, maybe I'll have like...
In America, which I don't think it would fly in America. But...
There's an audience for those games.
I don't
Not
think
a big one,
Just
though.
A very small audience, yeah.
I think more guys than girls would buy it.
So they can get hit on by guys?
There's some pretty weird people out there.
I guess so.
Guess we don't understand. We're too young. Dream Sea Club adaption to the 360 Hulse's games getting an anime adaption. Subaru is trying to make a deal with Gainax. You know.
Did you just call it Gainax?
Gainax. Shut up, I just woke up.
I guess you could pronounce it like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Subaru and Gainax Animation Project is pretty much trying to make an anime. It's like people from like Strike Witches, the storyboarder and the art concept artist from Gurren Lagann, Daisuke Kikuchi, and Mai Otsuka from like character design Mai Otsuka, Shakuna Oshana, stuff like that. And I don't know, it could be about cars and shit. I don't know. Yeah, I think companies are looking forward more to like anime partnerships in Asia. Like, here's something about like Microsoft Silverlight's getting like a little idol, like Miku Hatsune kind of. I got something about Production IG trying to do like a little 3D Cyborg 009 anime short.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Wait, you know.
They're doing a cyber wave. Like,
I told you about this earlier, King, but you weren't listening. You're too busy playing Demon's Souls or something.
All right, so which Cyborg 009 is it?
It's I don't know. Just says Cyborg 009.
And it's like Panasonic is sponsoring it. Shotaro Ishimura's classic fiction manga, Cyborg 09, was director Mamoru Oshii from Production IG.
It's only going to be about like 5 minutes long, but it's going to be...
Yeah, it's going to be like 4 minutes. It's like with Kenji Kawai from Ghost in the Shell, Death Note. It's composing the music. I guess it got some really famous people working on this for like a 4 minute thing.
Maybe we'll get a full new series.
It's just a short thing. Don't expect too much from it.
I mean, they did remake a lot of like 1960s and the 70s, and they
should be remade twice or three times. I think it's the third time.
Probably going to be the fourth time if it's going to be remade.
I always get Cyborg 009 mixed up with Kikaider for some reason.
Oh, I remember, I remember watching
Kikaider, that. I mean.
I think similar artists.
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, they're barely even similar anyway.
I guess that's all the news I have to share.
I don't really know if it's news, but Bakuman, the anime, has a trailer out. Like, less than 30 seconds.
I just saw that.
Bakuman.
Yeah, Bakuman.
You said Pokemon. Yeah, I saw the trailer too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't know about others, but I actually liked it. I mean, Sujin, I'm really not good with the names, the blonde haired one, right?
Yeah.
His voice was really weird, like it's too deep, but everyone else's sounded okay.
They didn't show the, what's his name? Yuji? I think. The Nemesis guy who writes
Crow. Oh, the Crow guy?
Yeah, I wanted to see him in animation.
Yeah, I imagine he's going to have a really fun voice.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Could be good.
He reminds me of the Elf, that manga.
Still skeptical on that show, though.
Shut up, Dave. You just don't know because you don't read manga enough.
I
kind of wonder if he'll get an English dub. For some reason, I see Vic Mignogna playing... the blonde-haired kid.
Well, cross your fingers for it, then, because hopefully...
Yeah, I hope... kind of hope not, but I have a feeling he is.
It'll probably be dependent on who picks it up and licenses it.
Yeah.
Steve Blum, David Hayter playing Shujin and... what's his name? I'm gonna draw this picture. It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, man, I'm gonna make an anime till we're 18. Yeah. I'm just kidding, sorry.
Studio UFO... Table.
Ufotable, I call it.
Oh. Yeah, they announced that they're going to make a 10 projects focusing around their mascot, Anime Tencho, I think is what his name is.
And the anime store clerk guy, or whatever, from Lucky Star.
I think he was part of other series too.
He had his own little short before.
Yeah. What I'm interested in is they're actually doing a Toho collaboration. Like, Anime Tencho will be in with, like, Toho characters.
No, I didn't see this.
Yeah, I saw it on Doujin Soft. I mean, not Doujin Soft, Doujin Style.
Oh.
Sign I go to. It's kind of interesting actually having a somewhat official anime for Toho.
If you watched his little short, I think you can find it on YouTube if you wanted. It's weird. I had no idea what was going on. Even by anime standards, I had no idea what was going on.
From what I was told, it's like a parody of every kind of show shown in anime.
What?
Like Anime Tencho.
The short? It kind of was, yeah. Like, it had every cliche. It had giant battles with...
I mean, if you think of it that way, it
makes sense, though.
Yeah, but I can't find any subs for that short.
No, you don't need subs. It doesn't even matter. There's no dialogue almost. The only dialogue you need to know is basic stuff that you should probably figure it out. I know how much you anime.
Still pretty funny and entertaining.
All right. Well, I'm just going to breeze through all this stuff. Let's see. Shukufuku, Campanella again, OVA... Asobu Niyuki Yogi in OVA. Angel Beats is getting another epilogue. which means that they're going to redo, they're kind of going to redo the ending, is what it means, kind of.
Awesome.
Finally.
Well, it's been greenlit, at least. So.
Cool.
Let's see here. Sayuki's manga creator has put her manga on health because of she's been having health problems. So it really sucks. I don't think anyone's reading Sayuki though here. So but
sucks.
Yeah, it does suck for anyone that.
Yeah, I saw the anime. From everything I've heard, the manga's better, but I did not like the anime at all.
I actually was going to pick up Sayuki Reload Blast until I realized that it's like the sequel to a sequel or something.
Oh, wait, I read the original manga Sayuki. I liked it.
Yeah. Let's see here. Sengoku Bisara is getting a movie. I already made a note about this, but it's getting... on the last episode of the Sengoku Bisara anime... That just got released a few days ago. Right at the end, they announced that there's going to be a movie made based off of the series, so that gets me all wet in the pants. And following that is also a K-On! Film that's going to be made, greenlit, whatever. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, Catch It One's English dub. Can't forget that.
I wonder who they're going to choose for Packy's voice.
I don't know. It's probably going to be Steve Bloom. I bet you anything it's going to be Steve Bloom.
It'll sound so awkward.
Like, no, I guess did you hear his Japanese voice?
I know it's like deep and serious and stuff, but...
Steve
Bloom as a rabbit. I don't know.
I could see it. I can see it. Yeah, I think that's all the news that really mattered to me.
Alright.
Not much I breezed through. All right, yeah, that's it.
All right, then let's move to our other segment. What are you watching or reading? Let's head it to Zakana. What are you watching or reading for the past week?
Well, currently I'm reading a manga called Frankenfran. It's a... how can I put it? It's like... it's a disturbing manga. It's one of those... it's a very dark-style comedy, while being very grotesque at the same time. Basically, the main character is, well, essentially Frankenstein. She was made by this, like, the world's greatest biologist or doctor. Like, he's so good, he can actually create life. And Fran is basically his second attempt at it. And Fran is basically... a doctor. It's like, yeah, she's a doctor. She's kind of a madman kind of a doctor. She's the type who, she will not let anything die even if it's better off staying dead.
Let me get this straight. A mad scientist creates a mad doctor who saves lives?
Pretty much.
Okay. Pretty good story so far.
Basically, she's obsessed with life to the point that things that are better off staying dead, she can't help with stuff by, like, making it stay alive. And, I mean, that comes up a few times where it's like, you feel bad for the people who she saves sometimes.
Like, are they trying to die? Or, like, do they want to die?
Like,
and she just, like saves them?
Like Elfenlied, Dave. Imagine if someone in Elfenlied who got killed, imagine if they sew them back in together. Like all their body parts, and then put them back together and send them off alive. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that. Yeah. Anyway, let me give you kind of a summary of just like two things that happen, like the plots. Basically, in the first chapter, a father wants to bring his son back to life. His son was killed in a car accident. Like, the only thing that was left was his brain. However, the father actually wants him alive for, like, insurance money or something. He really just wants, like, a fake body, just to say, yeah, he's still alive, so I can still get money off him. Fran brings, like, the son back to life, but not how the father thinks. Basically, Fran knocks out the doctor and surgically inserts his son's brain into his body. Basically, the guy wakes up and he hears his son's voice. and he has no idea where it's coming from, and then he realizes his son's face is on the back of his head, talking.
Holy crap. Oh my god, it's creepy.
And Fran, like, surgically altered his body so his neck could, like, twist 270 degrees around, so his son could be, like, the front if he wanted to. And, like, the son knows his father tried to kill him, so it's like, you know, it's gonna be an interesting life for them.
Now, I have some problems with whatever you just said, because, wait, does he have two brains in his head now?
Yeah, basically,
okay, okay, okay. That, I was just gonna say, if he has his son's brain, he can still think for himself. I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah, like they both share the same body because his son's body was pretty much destroyed.
Oh. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the first chapter. That pretty much gives you an idea of how things will go. Anyway, like a later on chapter, Fawn accidentally takes out the brain of a guy who she thought committed suicide, but he was actually sleeping.
Well, what?
Yeah. Basically, she decided to put his mind into the body of a bear. So he's basically in a bear suit. Just in like a movie. Think of like Teddy from Persona 4, basically.
Why didn't she just resuscitate him or something?
She used his body for parts.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah. Basically, after that, she kind of just lets the guy go. I think she had him assigned to work at an amusement park because the bear looked like a theme park attraction. And, like, the guy basically goes out and he meets this girl who ran away from home because her stepfather was sexually abusing her. I mean, it does
lot of fucked up people in this one.
Yeah. Basically, after hearing that, the guy decides to kidnap her more for her safety. And they eventually get caught by the police. However, the guy in the bear suit meets, like, the girl's stepfather, and he pretty much tears him apart.
This sounds really dark.
Yeah, and then the police, like, shoot the bear guy because he's insane. Afterwards, like, they're sent to Fran to heal them up and everything. And when you, like, the girl returns home. So when you see, like, the girl home and the guy come home too, you realize Fran put the guy who was originally in the bear in the stepfather's body. And, like, it's just this really touching moment.
So, she does a lot of brain surgery?
Yeah, she does a lot of brain surgery and just overall kind of surgery and genetic stuff.
I see. That could lead to some weird shit.
Yeah. Oh, did I forget to mention she put the, like, stepfather's brain in the suit, bear suit, and sent him to an amusement park to walk.
And that's why the same guy who did that shitty-ass manga I've been reading. But I think it's better, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
you haven't read Hell in ESPN.
Yeah. I mean, the manga's good. The only bad thing is sometimes it goes more into weird what the hell happened instead of dark. Like, you actually see the spaghetti monster. I won't spoil how, but
the spaghetti monster?
Yeah. You see a flying spaghetti monster in one of the chapters. Yeah. It goes into weird things sometimes, but overall, it's a good, dark, and funny series. That if you're into that kind of grotesque stuff, it's a good read.
Didn't you read a couple chapters of this game?
Yeah. But I couldn't really get into it.
Are you reading or watching anything else, Lakana?
Oh, I'm also currently reading, like, all the shonen stuff, but mainly I'm reading Bakuman, and that's getting a new anime, which I'm excited about. Man, I mean, thinking about it, it's kind of funny all the inside references. It's like when you hear them talking about how they have to do, like, these alternative kind of stories, it really makes you realize at times they're talking about themselves. I mean, like, the authors are talking about themselves.
Yeah, I got that too, because they are two, an author and an artist working on a manga about an author and an artist.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to hear them talk about how they should be non-mainstream and think about Death Note, like one of the most non-mainstream titles ever.
Yeah, and they're doing the same thing with this one. It's not mainstream at all.
Although, the only thing I find funny is how all the ideas they come up with in the manga, like, on paper, they sound really good, but when you think about it, I mean, like, really think about it, those would be pretty crappy. Like, they had a clone or something.
Dude, there was just one really good idea they came up with one time where, like, it was something about cloning. And I thought, that is an awesome idea, but they didn't pick that one. They picked some other shit. I was like, what the fuck, man? You had, like, gold there. But no, you picked this shitty thing. But, whatever. I can't take an idea of a mangaka inside of a mangaka's story, so whatever.
Also, I have to say, I love how they're able to make you love a character and then literally, like, take two pages to just despise them to the very core.
What are you talking
about? You know the character I'm talking about?
No.
The one mangaka guy?
Which one? There's so many.
One.
The fat fuck, man. Fuck him. Sorry.
I liked
him until that fucking arc where he just fucked everything up. That fucking asshole. Like, fuck him.
Never before have I wanted to punch a guy. It's like, I could, I would have. I would have kicked him a few times too.
Such a dick.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
Well, that's pretty much it for me.
I really should get into Bakuman. I mean, there's like a craze going on. People can't.
There's not a craze. It's been going on forever, Dave. You've just been oblivious to it.
I think it's just
Bakuman's getting popular in my eyes.
Might be just like the anime is coming up and people are getting into that. I don't know.
There's an anime because it was by the.
Coming up.
I mean, if you think about it, there's an anime because it was made by the guys who did Death Note, and look how good Death Note did.
I think it's getting an anime just because it's actually really good.
Alright, so, Rack, what are you watching or reading from the past week?
I've been watching Kimi ni Todoke. It's categorized as a shoujo anime.
It's a romance. What are you talking about?
Shut up. I'm sorry. I wanted to check it out, like the anime version of it, since I hear the manga version is getting like a live action. So I'm like, Kimi no Todoke, like the manga's really popular. Like, I might as well check the anime how it does. I kind of like it. You know, it's about like a girl named Kuronoma Sabako, and she's really misunderstood in school. So, you know, she has long black hair. She looks scary to everyone. You know, until she met, like, this guy who's really popular and started acknowledging her, she became a lot more known and kind of get her thoughts out there, really. You know, it's a nice anime romance in the air, high school, all that stuff. Thing I hate is how they draw their faces, how they never like use the original faces, always like something chibi on their face.
I like the chibi look, man. Shut up.
Chibi's fun.
Chibi sometimes saves animes from being terrible.
I know, but sometimes I want to see like the main character just like, you know, facial expressions more like, so like her like chibi face.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, she's really cute. What else? And then you cut it short. I'm also started Okami-san Chichinen no Nakamachi. Makatachi. I try to say that one setting. Yeah, I almost got it. I started watching that. Since that was just finished, it's about like some school club and they kind of like beat up people. I understand that one guy was Scotophobia. His name Ryoko?
Yeah, no. Ryoshi.
Ryoshi. Yeah, she has like an admirer, Okami-san.
Wait. What did you just say? Did you just call Ryoshi a her?
God dang it, now you've just messed up with the characters. No, I say he's admiring Okami-san.
Out of curiosity, does Okami-san have anything to do with the Okami game?
Not at all.
Okay, I didn't think so. I was having this mental image of a wolf dating people.
It has a different meaning.
Yeah.
What else do I want? I've been watching some more Occult Academy. Just like, kind of like a cult fiction, magical comedy.
I need to catch up with Occult Academy. I'm still on episode fucking 4.
So let's move it to King. What are you watching or reading for the past week?
Alright, I have been reading Siren.
Sorry.
Is like a mixture of Philip and Lied and Mira Nikki and I don't know, just a huge conglomerate of all.
Where the hell is Elfenlied in that thing?
The psychics.
What? Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so basically, it's about this. It starts off as a game or something, and I forgot what they called it.
It's like that calling card of
Nemesis. Yeah. So there's like a different. Basically, it was this cult going around saying you'll take people to paradise, right? And they send you this card. Then the way it works is you put, in Japan or something, you put the card inside the little payphone, and then someone will answer, and then she'll give you a survey and saying, you know, just ask some random questions, seeing if you belong in paradise, whatever, right? So the main character, his old childhood friend gets involved in this cult thing, and he wants to save her, so he himself gets involved inside this thing too. But what happens actually is when paradise actually is, I'm trying not to spoil it. Basically, this calling card summons this supposedly monster named Nemesis Q, right? And Nemesis Q transports the main character and his childhood friend to this, you know, a different world.
Supposedly. It's basically like paradise. A barren wasteland.
Yeah, and it's like the giant desert, this so-called paradise. So they get there, and they find out that they're inside this game that Nemesis Q has made. That, what's it called? It's some place, some, you know, different time inside the world, and he wants to help them solve whatever. He's weird, so they don't understand what he's trying to do.
He's weird. That's all the explanation you need.
They just know that they've been teleported to this random barren desert land, and they don't know what to do. So a group of them go exploring, and they get killed by these monsters that are there, called Taboo, basically. And eventually they figure out exactly what they have to do. Like, it has to do a lot with phones. That's why I describe it as, like, Mira Nikki as well.
Basically, I thought it was a lot like Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer, though, because of the powers.
Yeah.
More than Elfenlied, whatever you compared it to.
Basically, the world it looks like a giant desert. It's a giant wasteland. But instead of the sky, there's like this film over the sky. You know, you can't really see the sun and stuff. There's a big film covering the world that's blocking out the sun and stuff. And with this film, the atmosphere has changed as well. And this atmosphere starts, you know, locking their natural potential for psychic powers like telekinesis and pyrokinesis and stuff like that. That's what this film does. So that's part of the game. Whoever survives the first round gets to continue. It's not like they have a choice, though.
Like, on each of their calling cards, they have, like, this number. I think it starts at 50, maybe?
Yeah, it started at 50.
And like, every time you like finish a round by going to the exit, it knocks off a random, I don't know if it's random or anything, but it knocks off a certain number.
Each trip is worth a different amount of points.
Yeah, and when your card reaches zero, that means you won the game or you're out of the game.
you don't have to go to this so-called paradise anymore. So eventually they figure out that this paradise is actually the world, but a certain amount of time inside the future, basically. So eventually it starts, the story centers around them figuring out what happened to the world, why is it this barren wasteland now, and they're trying to, you know, change the past to save the world, basically. So it's, you know, typical Shonen stuff in that case, but it's so much deeper. Time travel mechanics.
It has some amazing moments in that manga, man.
Yeah.
That just,
you thought time travel was crazy? You have to read that, because time travel in Siren is absolutely absurd. What about the stuff that would happen inside the future and past, and if you change stuff, how things happen.
Like,
so,
alternate universes and...
Well, what they describe it as, kind of, is that there's a breaking point to where if you do too much to change the past, if you, like, change too much in the past, then it'll create an alternate universe. But if you change just enough, it'll stay in the same universe but alter slightly, kind of.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I don't understand their theory of time travel.
And one time they went to the future. This is where the barren wasteland, and when they get called to the future, they go there, and eventually they learn that more people have survived, right? Not just, it's just not this barren wasteland. There's actually some survivors there. So with that knowledge, they can go back in the time and, you know, try to make more survivors happen, you know, try to change something that would make, you know, something good happen. So in one of the futures, say, one of the main characters in the past died, right? But they can go back and they can go back to their present time, change something, you know, just enough, and he'll live inside the future. And, you know, the next time they go to the future, nothing, instead of having an alternate universe, everyone inside the future will remember what happened, but they see it as that person that was supposed to be dead had never died.
Don't even try and think about what he just said, because your brain will kill you.
Yeah, it's,
just
go with it.
So it's a big thing about time traveling and all this other stuff, and it's really good. And because of this film that's covering the Earth and its atmosphere, they eventually get powers, and each character's powers are a little bit different. The main character's, of course, has to be broken.
Severely broken, one of the most overpowered powers ever.
Yeah. So, basically, eventually, they find out that a group, this other cult called the Wise, this group of psychics, man-made psychics, were the cause of this devastation happening to the Earth. So they look for where they, in the past, well, in the present, they look for the Wise's location so they can stop them from, you know, causing the destruction of the Earth, basically.
And the Wise are equally as broken as the main character, kind of, basically.
So a lot of time travel, a lot of psychic powers going back and forth. Really interesting. So that's what I've been reading, and that's all I've been reading, because my whole focus has been on that. Other than the few chapters of The World God Only Knows that comes out every now and then. So,
fuck, when's Mirai Nikki kind of fucking up there? I want to read another goddamn chapter.
I want to read that too. It's really getting to some good parts now.
So let's move it to Ven. Watching or reading?
Well, I can't even talk about Siren anymore, because King basically covered every fucking thing in that manga, so whatever. I just say Siren is awesome, and if you haven't read it yet, I hate you. But yeah, the Durara Ross special is the only other thing I really want to talk about, which I think Dave watched this a little while ago, so he can help me out with this a little bit. Let's see here. It's episode 12.5. I don't really know where in the story it happens. I don't even think it matters, really. But it basically revolves around these, I think it's three, maybe it's two. No, it's three. Three red bags in the show and each one has a different like thing in them. One has money in it. One has like some food or something that this girl made for her boyfriend or something like that. I don't know. And the third one has
it's
a surprise. But it basically the thing starts off from like not the end of the episode, maybe like three quarters in of the storyline. And it starts from the beginning. It jumps back like hours and then a few hours, and it keeps jumping back to tell the entire story. And then like it jumps all the way back to where you started the anime at, and then it keeps going from there. So basically, it jumps around a lot, but it does it in a different way than I'm used to with these kind of. You know, this director is famous for jumping around a lot, like in Baccano, and Durarara jumps around a lot as well, but just not as much. But he did it like in reverse this time, which was really disorienting, but it was pretty unique and pretty cool at the time when I was watching it.
I wish they could have used the special to fill in certain plot holes.
I was actually hoping that it would have the Blue Squares leader or something like that in it. Or Isaiah's sisters.
Or but, you know, Salty.
It does have Salty, shut up.
But I mean not in the what you think's in the bag is not in the bag.
Yeah, I shut up. Don't talk. Yeah,
so,
I know.
Is this the kind of thing you have to watch
you have,
multiple times what? To really get
no,
it?
No, not at all. It's really easy.
Pay attention.
It's actually pretty easy to follow, but as opposed to actually the entirety of Durarara was really easy to follow compared to it's Baccano wise, but The special, it has a lot of things. The main focus was aliens, I thought. There was a lot of focus on, most of the humor was based around aliens, which I found hilarious. There's a cameo in there that really tickled my funny bone, my funny britches and stuff. And, I don't know, I just like seeing Salty and her little, Salty has, apparently we find out that she has a fear of aliens, which I found adorable. It was cute as hell when she was freaking out. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm just a big Salty fan, so whatever. And I liked the way it was directed. It was actually different. And I can't wait for the second episode. Hopefully it'll have some new stuff and not... some new characters will be in the next episode. I'm just hoping so bad.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Durarara special was awesome. And it reminds me why I like Durarara so much.
So... what I've been watching and reading for the past week is actually a manga that King recommended me a while ago. It's called Kimi no Iro Machi, which translates to A Town Where You Live. And
yeah, I recommended that to you a long time.
I read that.
Yeah, it's a romance manga. And it's not unlike other romances. It kind of moves kind of fast for its pace. And I kind of like that kind of direction where it's going to. It's kind of very likable manga. It has likable characters. And
where are you in it now?
I'm 20 or so chapters in it. Okay. When is
so you haven't gotten to where it gets super depressing and I have to drop it. I mean, I guess I'll pick it up again a little bit later, but it's just so depressing right now, so I can't read it.
I need an update on where I'm at that manga.
Yeah, once you start reading it, you just can't stop. It's just very addicting, and I just love the direction it's going in.
So depressing day.
Are you up to date on it too?
No, I'm since I dropped it, I've been 20 chapters behind.
Oh.
So I'm guessing this isn't exactly a happy series, or is it?
No, it starts off really. School lifey, everyday life kind of thing, happy stuff. But where I stopped, it got really depressing. I don't want to spoil it for Dave, so.
Sounds like Shuffle. Shuffle started out really happy-go-lucky and then got really fucked up somewhere along the lines.
It was mostly
the fault of some orange-haired girl.
The main character is a good guy. He's not a jerk or an ass or anything. And
he's not really dense.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot like Shuffle. I don't know if anyone else... Dave, why don't you make this comparison?
Because it's not same like Shuffle.
What are you talking about?
You have to...
And what's
happening to them right now is really messed up, so I don't want... It's really messed up.
Shuffle always came off as an idiot to me.
What?
You're okay. You know that girl that he likes, right, Dave?
Yeah.
All right, not the main heroine, the other girl.
Right.
All right. Something like a fallout happens between all three of them, and it's so bad. It's not like an argument or bad or, you know, anything bad that happens. It's just a predicament they get placed in. It's like, I can't even say it's anybody's fault. It's just something that just naturally happens, and it's so interesting.
I think you told me a bit about what already happens in the story, but...
What did I?
I'll tell you after the show, but yeah, right. I think I already know what it's going to. But, I always pictured the main girl to be, like, purple-haired instead of blue-haired. But, that's just my...
They always fuck that shit up, man. Every time I'm reading a manga, I think their hair color is supposed to be something. And then when they do a color spread, and then their hair color is, like, the opposite color wheel side, I'm like, what the fuck? How is that character's hair green when in the manga her hair is colored black? You know, it doesn't make any sense, but, you know, whatever. It's manga hair. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it after the show.
And I've been finishing some series up lately, like Occult Academy, which I thought ended pretty cool, considering like the way it deals with the time travel. It deals it very well and actually makes a lot of sense. And I thought that handled that ending actually pretty well, because I thought that series just...
time travel doesn't make more sense than Sirens.
Shut up, King. Sirens time travel was confusing as fuck. And it made no sense. It defied the laws of time travel, which don't exist.
That's, I thought Occult Academy was just an okay series up to that point. And that's what made me give it, like, pretty high score. And... I also finished Asobi, which...
Oh, don't talk about Asobi. Ew, what are you doing?
I'm just saying I finished it, and I just wish it was just not so terrible. And I blame you for getting me into it, dude. You know what I mean? Like,
what? All I said was that it was interesting. It had aliens in it that looked like cat girls. It was your own fault for watching the damn thing.
Neko cat girl? I mean, Neko aliens?
Yeah, Neko aliens.
It doesn't even have anything to do with them being cats. It's just, they're just cat girls for the sake of being cat girls.
Man, that little robot dog, he's so annoying.
I know.
That, like,
this laugh.
Whenever he laughs, I want to demolish the motherfucker.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I've been watching. Don't mind that. Let's move on to our review segments. Let's head it to Zikana. What are you reviewing this week?
I'm going to be reviewing JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Series 3, Stardust Crusaders, the manga. There is an anime, two parts of it actually, one created in the 90s and then one relatively recently. Anyway, in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, like, it's a battle manga pretty much. You find out the enemy, go to point A, point B, point C, fight people, pretty much that. It has that very, like, late 80s, early 90s kind of structure to it, which is actually really nice compared to nowadays when it just tries to be so, like, it tries to be so deep when it doesn't need to be. Just give us the action.
I think nowadays shonen mangas need to be deep, otherwise they're outdated,
yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, they do need to be deep, but sometimes we just want the action. Basically, the series starts off, well, Series 3, starts off with Dio, the protagonist in the first series, emerging from his coffin at the bottom of the sea. I won't spoil why, because, I mean, it's pretty cool how all that happens, but basically, all you need to know is it's been 100 years since he's been down there. He's back up, and he has Jonathan's like body, like basically he severed the head off of the good guy's body, and now he Dio's using the body, like, as his own now.
So you really have to read the first two to understand what the hell.
Yeah, it's, believe me, series two explains a lot about vampires and everything like that. Yeah, basically, with Dio coming back, all the Joestars, because he's Dio's using a Joestar body, basically all of them activate their hidden potentials and they gain powers. And, like, it's explained that their powers are called stands because, like, they're ghostly images that kind of stand beside them. Or, I mean, it makes sense when you see it. Anyway, their powers are pretty much the manifestation of their soul. Like, whatever their root, like, true personality is, that's what their power will
reflect. So it's like a persona.
Yeah, basically that. And in the anime version, they actually kind of, not exactly, like, intentional, but you can tell, like, they probably didn't realize it, but they actually had Jotaro point a gun at Zed and fire. Like, as in Persona 3, but it was to show that his stand was so powerful, it could actually catch a bullet in it. And basically, the main character in this one is named Jotaro, which is a pun in Japanese, like, for JoJo. There's just a whole long thing with JoJo's in it. That's why it's called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. His grandfather, I think, named Joseph or Jonathan. I keep getting them mixed up. He's pretty much the one who explains all this. And he brings a friend named Abdul, who pretty much nearly kills Jotaro to unlock his power. Because apparently fighting is the best way to get your power out. As in all, like, series. Basically, later on, it's revealed that if you don't have a strong will or a fighting spirit, the stand will kill you. And it turns out Jotaro's mother, she doesn't have the fighting spirit, and her stand is actually killing her slowly. And that pretty much sets up the whole premise. They have to go and fight and kill Dio to save Jotaro's mom, basically, before her stand kills her. And on the way, they meet, like, other stand users. Either they fight them or they join together. Something I really like, though, is in the series, it's not just humans that have stands. They actually have animals with stands, and by far, their stands are probably the most dangerous ones, even though they're kind of the most simple in idea.
Does it have a good cast of characters?
Yeah, the characters are actually pretty good. I mean, they're kind of that traditional, like, you have the tough guy, you have kind of the jokester, but at the same time, there's a lot of
the Yosuke character, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you have that kind of, like, you have a personality with them. It's not just, there's one guy who's always full of jokes, but always gets defeated. It's like a Polnareff is pretty much the jokester, kind of, without initially being the jokester. He has a lot of shit happen to him. Basically, as a running gag in the series, he constantly gets attacked in the bathroom.
Like, that sounds very Yosuke-like. I could see that happening to him.
Polnareff fights a stand that, like, attacks in the mirror. And when he's in the bathroom, he, like, sees this weird-looking guy with two left hands, like, in the mirror. And he, like, keeps looking back, like, why is it not there? And eventually the stand attacks him, and he realizes, yeah, he's getting attacked from somewhere he can't see. I mean, and that kind of goes with how, like, interesting stands are. Like, a lot of them have really cool powers when you really think about them. Like, the one I was just talking about, it can attack, like, in the world mirrors, pretty much. So, I mean, it's like, how do you fight that? And how they fight it is actually pretty interesting. I won't spoil how they beat them, but it is a very neat premise on a lot of the enemies. I found that the enemies and heroes, like all of their abilities, were really balanced. It wasn't like the main guy, the main hero, was automatically stronger than everyone else, even though
Ragnar.
Yeah, even though Star
God damn King. Sorry.
So technically, Jotaro Stan is Star Platinum. His ability is pretty much absolute power. And they actually managed to balance that out with everyone. Basically, his flaw is he has no range whatsoever. He can attack like 2 or 3 meters in front of him, but outside of that, he pretty much has nothing. And that gets used against him fairly often, actually. And it's his like allies that end up helping him, like with distant fighting. I'll say how they fought and how they used the powers was by far some of the best moments I've seen in an action like series. It didn't feel overpowered.
And that's cried vibe from what you just said, kind of.
What I hate about a lot of series, at least sometimes, it felt like if someone died in front of the main character's eyes, it's like they don't react to it, or they don't react how a human would. It's like they just, oh, person died. Okay, focus on the villain.
What are you talking about? You mean like, I've never seen that happen.
Yeah, I've never seen that happen.
At times, it really did feel like the author was trying to make Jotaro into a badass. Like,
he's too OP'd? Or?
Yeah, just, well, not too overpowered, just like, he was... It felt like he was giving him too many chances to be a badass. Like, even on the sidelines, just... I mean, I don't know, it just... Maybe it's just how he was drawn, but it just felt like he was trying to make him too much of a badass at times. I mean, that's just me. Oh, there is kind of a... There's a little girl that follows them around for some reason, kind of as the token normal person, like, the one to show, like... No one else can see Stan's, that kind of thing. And oddly enough, she disappears a lot and reappears without reason. Like, I mean, her story is she's trying to look for a dad and she's traveling with them, but it's like, after one point, she just never comes up again. Not even like, oh, she found her dad or something. That just kind of bugged me.
Sorry.
The series gets a little gory at times when it doesn't necessarily need it. But at the same time, it kind of fits with the over-violent feel of some of the fights. Also, they're all, like, moments where evil characters just kill people for the sake of showing how evil they are.
Fuck, I hate that shit, man.
Yeah.
God.
Custom shonen rule.
No, that's the one of the reasons why I can't stand the newest episodes of Legend of the Legendary Heroes, because that's all they do, basically, is they show the evil guys doing evil things to innocent people. Just like, to prove how evil they are.
Yeah, there are many ways to show someone's evil. I mean, just have them talk, speak of things in such a nonchalant way that just horrifies the reader. Like,
well,
talk about how...
Life is going.
You know, like, talk about how they love...
You don't need, like, random, like, not even villains. It just has to be, like, antagonist guys. Like, just dudes killing people for no reason. That's just so stupid.
Yeah. Maybe they find it fun. Maybe that's the reason.
That's what I'm saying. I can't really vouch for them because I've never been in, like, that kind of situation. But those guys are assholes more than they are evil. They need to die. I'm glad most of the time, after someone does something like... You remember Elf and Lie, Dave?
Yeah.
That one scene with the puppy? And then, look what happened to them. Fuck that shit, man. You don't fuck with innocent things. You get
I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong, but I laughed my ass off during that scene.
You fucking heartless bastard.
Well, you did. You laughed during the part when the bomb went off, Ben. You're
what?
You're just
Wait,
heartless.
Which one? I didn't laugh. That was Richard.
What do you mean?
Not the puppy part.
I
laughed when the girl in Mars of Destruction got her head blown off.
I never seen those animes. You guys talk about. Don't add me in it.
Rich is the one who laughed at the bombing of Hiroshima.
No, I didn't.
Jesus.
No, I didn't.
Okay, admittedly, that sounds kind of funny.
You guys are all going to hell.
I know.
I'm an atheist. I don't believe in hell.
Oh, God.
Okay. Okay, sorry.
And I'm Jewish.
Oh, yeah. Some of the chapters feel kind of filler-ish. I mean, that's kind of how it is for a lot of series, but I mean, like, I like filler when it's kind of funny or doesn't take itself that seriously. Sometimes the filler took itself a little too seriously.
Okay.
And yeah, my final con with it, Vanilla Ice.
I thought he was in the next season or whatever.
He's in series 3. Vanilla Ice. That's a character's name, and I'm not joking. That really is his name. And what I hate about him is he's my third favorite character in Series 3, and I fucking hate his name. That's the only bad thing about him. His stand power is amazing. I mean, let me just put it like this. His stand can become a black hole, and how it's used is amazing. Yeah, that was pretty much it. Yeah, overall, I rated a 4 out of 5. Like, even though it has a few of those old-time shortcomings, everything that it does deliver on, the comedy, the action, it's just good. And also, I like to say, anyone who can put hearts on a villain and have it come off as badass deserves recognition. Dio, in like his final appearance, he has 2 gold hearts on his knees. Anyone who can manage to pull that off deserves a good amount of recognition.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty much it on JoJo.
Sweet.
Then let's move to Rack. What are you reviewing this week?
Oh, my bad. I was muted. I'm going to review. I actually changed it to Kabuto, the anime.
Go.
Sorry, I changed my mind all the time.
It doesn't matter. I don't have anything to say about
Kabuto. So I'm gonna shut up, man. I'm just kidding. Okay. So I'm gonna review Kabuto, the anime series from Clamp. Their newest installment just finished recently. It's 24-26 episode.
God, Kabuto was 2009, wasn't it?
Yeah, it finished in like 2010, I think.
Man.
So, yeah, I thought I'd pick something recently to review and something popular like Clamp. So, Kabuto presents itself and starts us off as, like, some girl who just appears out of nowhere from, like, a different world, like Mary Poppins. And she basically has, like, this role to, like, she has to heal, like, people's broken hearts. So she collects, like, these little jewelry things that they call candy in a bottle, which, like, she fills up in a year so she could get her wish. But in the anime, they don't really present why she's there and why she's doing it. Yeah, so basically she's on Earth in Japan, so she basically doesn't really know what to do. And she has this little stuff, just kind of like this, like this figure and, like a deity and a stuffed animal who kind of guides her. Mostly, like, kind of like a coach. And he basically abuses her and grades her on her work to heal people's heart. Kabuto, the main character that appears out of nowhere, she's this optimistic, clumsy girl. And, you know, she basically, she's clumsy, stupid, and yet she's innocent and cute. For the first half of the anime, it's kind of cheesy. It's kind of mediocre at times, but, like, in the other half of the anime, it does kind of get seriously back on track to the story. Like, the first half is, like, you know, there's people that she finds, she cures a broken heart, but, like, not everyone has, like, a heart that can be healed easily. Some people's, like, arcs are saved later on, like, important characters, so she could heal them. Yeah, you know, it's basically just mostly like a fun, heartwarming anime. Trying to like, and the things that have problems with it, like in story, like the characters could kind of a little bit, perky. Maybe a little perky. eccentric or kind of goofy to me. Yeah, they're a little bit optimistic. I mean, it's a simple story. It kind of feels repetitive, but like in the half of the series, it kind of gets kind of takes a little twist and turn where it gets a little bit serious, and it just feels more depressing. Like the first half is happy, but like near the end, it gets really depressing. But I'm not going to try to spoil it. I'm just going to say that. The art style, it's very, you know, it's very like flourished and, you know, kind of polished.
You mean the 2009 animation?
Yeah.
Whatever.
I mean, Clamp generally does its character designs pretty well. I mean, like...
Oh, they don't?
King gets all of
Clamp like does their character designs really well.
Well, I like the ones in Code Geass.
So you mean like two pick characters, right? Is that what you're saying?
I just gotta say, Dave, while we're on the topic, Colin's body measurements are completely unrealistic, so I don't know if you should be talking about this.
Animes are realistic. If they're real...
Well, I'm just saying.
I mean, if you're thinking about some like show bits, then yeah, it's kind of poor, but, you know, something like Kabuto looks pretty good. And
all the characters are toothpicks.
Kabuto doesn't look like toothpicks from what I saw. But.
The thing I like about Kabuto is that they kind of show cameo appearances, and it's basically like the setting. It's like kind of basically like in the same world as Chobits. Like you recognize like the characters, because they kind of reuse like buildings and settings and characters from it. It's just that their names are changed just without the robot setting.
Yeah, Clamp likes to use their characters a lot, like just in other series. It's always kind of.
They even bring like cameo.
I feel like we've talked about this before, Richard.
I've been watching it for like this whole month, but like I didn't finish it. So yeah, it's pretty good. I give it like, probably give like a 8.7 out of 10 or 8.5 out of 10.
8.7. What the?
Shut up.
All right then, let's move to King. What are you reviewing this week?
This week, I am going to review Mouse, which...
fucking theme song is still stuck in my head. I can't.
Hey, can you, like, put the theme song in now?
The theme song is damn catchy. Basically, for hundreds and hundreds of years, this family has, what's it called, like, been a scion of a master thief, which they call Mouse. Basically, the new member of, well, he's not a new member now that he's the head of, you know, the main character is he's the new head of the family. So he's the new Mouse, basically, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Right.
It's basically there's
a thief called Mouse that has been seen throughout history for hundreds and hundreds of years. But it's really just this family that each new head of the family becomes the Mouse of this generation and so on and so forth, right? So this thief Mouse, he calls him, he's like a master thief. Basically his motto is anything in the world can be stolen, right? So he doesn't steal things just because, you know, he's poor, he wants money or anything, or he's bad. He's really
rich, I think.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, this carefree guy. It's just that their motto is anything in the world can be stolen. So the police, you know, the law enforcement, they've seen Mouse throughout the hundreds of years, and they've always ended up challenging him, saying, God, you Mouse can't steal this, this is, you know, blah, 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 Mouse can't steal this. Look, we made this giant building out of cheese, Mouse can't steal this, but he always ends up being able to steal it in mundane ways or anything. And because he doesn't care about this stuff, like, the next day he'll send it back with, like, first, before he steals it, he sends a card saying, I'm going to steal this, okay? So get everything ready to try and stop me. Then he makes his plan and whatnot, and then he goes and steals it. And he always does what he says he does. He always steals it. But you know, he's a good guy. He's not, you know, evil. He doesn't want the money or anything. So he usually just gives the things he's stolen back the next day or so. So he's a really interesting character. And basically, he's when he's not Mouse, he is this high school teacher, this high school science teacher, right? And at high school, you know, no one knows that, of course, no one knows that he's this legendary thief. But he has these three, what's it called? Three of these female teachers that work at the school with him treat him like trash at the school, like they degrade him and abuse him and stuff like that. But how it actually turns out is that they're the assistants of Matt when he's Mouse, the master thief, and they're actually like really crazy in love with him and crap, so it's kind of really edgy. But it's the story is pretty interesting, you know. It's nice to see a character like that. I like his little model that anything can be stolen and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, I think that's the thing I liked about Mouse was the character. He was basically a villain, but he was a good villain. Like, he did good things for being a bad guy in the eyes of the law, even though he wasn't.
Yeah,
he was a good guy.
An anti-hero?
No, he was the hero of the story. But in the like, if you're talking about like by police perspective, yeah, he was a villain, but he was like a really well-mannered, outspoken villain where he's really
He didn't kill anybody or anything. He doesn't use weapons, doesn't use force or anything. Just steal stuff, you know. He does it in cunning, clever ways.
Like, you know, like Isaac that. And Miria from Baccano, Dave. They're not villains. But they steal stuff. But it's not exactly... It's not like that, but it's that idea.
The anime really reminds me of Lupin, but a little bit less action-y and a little more etchy. So... If you like Lupin, you might like Mouse. It gets some mixed reviews. Ben doesn't really like it. I've seen a lot of people don't really like it, but I kind of liked it. And I'm not really a fan of, you know, the overly edgy stuff, but I found the story to be pretty actually good when you looked into it. So the only things were wrong with it were, of course, you know, the police officers were garbage at what they do. They, you know, shouldn't be police officers. You know, it's, I don't know what more they can do. They're really inept. And the things he gets away with, he shouldn't be able to. Like, one of the things he steals is a newly made, like, 1,000-floor skyscraper. And he steals it by making it drift out to sea and stuff like that. Oh, God. He has, like, since he's rich, he has ties with a lot of people and stuff. So he actually got the United States military and naval force to help him steal some stuff. So it was kind of funny. But, yeah, I like his character. He's really interesting. Nothing. Because of his character and stuff like that. And because that intro theme is really damn catchy. I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
So... Do, like, all the other world governments just love dicking around with Japan? It's like...
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
it's their playground. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I don't know why, but every other military, like, they know Mouse and they'll help him steal stuff from Japan. So it's pretty funny. And, like, since he's a teacher, you know, at school, there are, like, these other students who are in love with him. So it's a lot like a harem as well, too, so... And it's just, you know, kind of overly edgy, but it's still good.
You're not going to talk about the time he got drunk?
No, I'm not going to talk about the time he got drunk. Okay. That was like the last episode, too.
It was pretty shocking.
Well, basically, what the head, this family does, you know, the head, the Mouse family, what they do is they teach all their sons to, like, really abuse women and stuff like that. But ever since he was a young age, he's been like, no, I don't want to do stuff like that. I'm not a creepy ass like that. So he treats everyone with respect and everything. But when he gets drunk, his, like, that side of him comes out and he's kind of crazy.
Wait, when you say abuse, When you say abused, what? You mean like physically hurt them or just like
no,
do
like,
what it wants with them?
Like whip them with a whip and stuff like that.
Like
master kind of stuff, you know. That.
Yes.
And like his assistants like that side of them. That's the they like that part of them because that's how they've been. His assistants, they go into their backstories like this first assistant was made to, well, you know, was dedicated to be a slave ever since she was, you know, a little girl, but he doesn't see her that way or stuff like that. So he just sees her as like a friend or assistant or stuff like that. It's interesting.
He still sleeps with all his assistants anyway, so like it matters.
But that's more of them forcing themselves on him. It's not really his fault.
Yeah, it's never the main character's fault at all, is it?
Yeah, he's so attractive.
Yeah. He's not attractive, that's the thing. I don't see what these women see in these men. Oh, well. Maybe I just don't have a good sense for attractive men, but I don't look at guys like... unlike you, Dave, who seems to know exactly what an attractive man looks like.
And the thing that's really funny is that when Mouse first appeared, it was shown on the kids station in Japan, so that's where it debuted at, so I don't know what they were thinking. Maybe just because it's Japan, they can get away with stuff like that.
Well, this was back in, like, way long ago, so maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of old. It has the old, you know, art style to it. I mean, I don't like it more than Lupin, but I do think he's
not.
Better.
What the fuck were you thinking if you thought that was better than Lupin?
I think he's better Thief than Lupin, though.
You thought it was better what? Thief?
Thief.
Well, of course, he's the best thief in the world. There's no one better than him, probably.
When they go into how he's going to steal this stuff, it really has some genius ideas and stuff like that. I like that crap.
It's really...
But yeah, 4 out of 5 stars.
Then let's move to Ven. What are you revealing this week?
Alright, I am reviewing Setekai Yakuin Domo of the summer 2010. Don't start now, King. You haven't even heard anything yet.
What are you talking about?
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. You just dropped it, don't worry. Basically, it's just a story about our main character, Takatoshi Suda. I think that's how you say his name. Probably. He enrolled in this academy, but he didn't. I don't think he knew that the academy used to be an all-girls school, but they recently started letting like guys in. I think it was due to declining birth rates. I'm not sure what the premise was here, but basically, his first day getting to school, he on his way to school, he sees like nothing but girls, and when he's in front of school, he sees nothing but girls. So he starts suspecting that, yeah, this is going to be an all-girls school. And he's confronted by this, what's her name? I think her name is Shino, maybe? Yeah. Who's part of the student council. And she asks, and she, like, picks on him for being dressed not right or something like that. And she forcibly makes him the vice president of the student council. And it's kind of just it's not a slice of life, I don't think. It's just very episodic. Following the life of,
it's,
I guess it's like,
what's it called, the Yomokan kind of anime, where they have a bunch of sketches.
Oh yeah, I don't know what those are. I don't watch enough of those to actually know the name. But basically, the anime, it revolves around sketches basically. With each sketch has a punchline to it. There are exceptions to where it actually does do stuff that follows the plot, but then it usually ends on a punchline. Kind of. But basically, he's the vice president. He's the only man inside the student council. He's surrounded by 3 other women. 2 of them, specifically, one being the main heroine, Shino, the other one, Aria, who is a ditzy, big-breasted woman. They both, for some reason, all their jokes are pertaining to either, like, sex or women hygiene and periods and gross
it's
stuff.
A very inappropriate anime.
Yeah. there is another character called Suzu, though, who's actually really good. She's not, like, most of her jokes are based around her height, since she's so small. but she's also a genius, which is kind of funny because she considers herself a high school, like she's a high school student, but people keep mistaking her for a grade school student, you know, that whole shtick, but
the jokes are so childish. It's like, okay, say someone walked into a room full of people, they said dick, you know, some people would laugh, but then if he would come back and say it again, you know, it's old.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's one of the main faults in the series, is that really the comedy gets very stale very fast. Like, it doesn't even take a full 2 episodes or 3 episodes. You get bored of the constant sex puns and all that period talk about around the first episode. If you stick through it, then you basically really have a weird sense. It's not a weird sense of humor. I think you just have a more open sense of humor than I did. But there were some really funny parts in this anime. But I thought most of the funny parts were basically about Suzu, and I thought the jokes about her height were really funny, and I thought there was like scenes. There was a scene with a soccer ball and a deer and other stuff that I really laughed hard at. I thought the teacher, even though she was very sex crazed and lustful and always lusting after her students, I thought she was pretty funny at times. I thought she was the only character that I really enjoyed who was being perverted. There was also a younger sister character called Kotomi, who's the main character's little sister, who's also very perverted. But, you know, and along the way, they introduce other characters like Mitsuba, who's voiced by the girl who does Baka's voice from Soul Eater, Chiaki Omagawa or something. And there's also Renko, who's the newspaper club person who's always, like, sneaking in to get dirty photos of the president. And there's Kaede, who has a fear of men. And there's a bunch of characters mixed in. They introduce a lot of characters, and some of them are really fun. The only two characters that really make this show hard to watch are the two girls I said before, Shino and Aria, who just constantly bombard you with, like, sex jokes and everything that just that's not funny, but
you just kind of groan every time.
I groaned a lot during the show, but the show did some things really good. Like, you know, Suda and Suzu, they were really good characters. I thought they made, like, every time one of either Aria or whoever made a joke about sex, either Suda or Suzu would come in and say something that would make them seem sensible. Like, they would make a comment that made them seem the characters were out of place or whatever. Like that, like the comments about sex, they seem so out of place and so out of line. They don't even make sense sometimes. But they're there to catch them and bring them back to reality. And since it's sketch form, each punchline ends with a cutaway to, like, something that describes what the last joke was about or something like that. Not much else that was good. I think Maka's voice was awesome. I love Maka's voice, and that's why I actually kept watching this anime, was to see more Mitsuba, because Mitsuba was this, like, what's she, the judo club? She's in the judo club, right, Dave?
Yeah,
and
she's in the...
Like, she's like this pure maiden heart. She doesn't know what sex is, and she doesn't know anything dirty or anything, so every time there's a sex joke, she's like, I don't get it, or something like that. She get mistakes, everything. So she's one of my favorite characters in the show, because she was really, I don't know, it was just a good character choice. But that's the only character I really like right now.
I thought they should have done more with the romance of the show, because that was a breath of fresh air.
That's a big letdown. That's one of my biggest letdowns, is that this show could have been a really good romance at times. Like that one episode where they're exchanging gifts at the Christmas party. I thought that turned into a really good romance moment. But
they ruined it with the sex joke. It's
they
just
fucked
completely
it up.
Shit.
I don't understand this anime. But it's directed by the guy who directed Princess Lover. And I kind of see it a little bit. I mean, it's not all up to the director whether the anime is good or not. But I can definitely see a Princess Lover style going on here.
I enjoyed Princess Lover.
Yeah, but Princess Lover was perverted too. You forget a little bit. It had its perverted moments. But Yeah, Princess Lover was way better than this, though. The voice acting was okay. I didn't have any complaints. Yeah, that's all I gotta say. But yeah, except for Maka's voice was awesome. The art style was very fresh, and it felt very 2010-ish, which is a very good thing because I like when art styles define themselves for each year. And I really felt like this was the defining art style for 2010. Even though it abused chibi forms a lot, I thought that was very cute at times. I thought they put them in it when they needed them.
Added to the humor.
I thought the chibi forms were good use for humor. I don't think they should be used in other places, like in Zombie Lone, where they use chibi forms every like 5 seconds for no reason. But I think they did.
Yeah, that got annoying.
Yeah, I know, but I think they do a good job here in balancing with the humor. And that's basically all I really have to say. I would give this a 3 out of 5, but I enjoyed some jokes and they really made me laugh. And some of them are really, really sticking with me, so I give it a 3.5 out of 5 instead of a 3.
Kind of hate how predictable some of the jokes got. Like,
yeah, I know.
I could just tell like what box is gonna vibrate, and like, you know, it's like happens so often that you didn't get tired of it.
Yeah, did you watch the last episode yet?
Yeah, I did.
That character they introduced, and I thought she was going to be another sensible character where she wouldn't be like all sex, sex, sex every 5 seconds, but then all of a sudden, oh god, she has a dildo, and fuck! She's a sex character.
Totally saw it coming
from
opening.
Oh, whatever.
It's an opening, you know?
Ah, whatever. I don't fucking even care anymore. The anime's over, and it doesn't need my attention. They did, in the last episode, reference a lot of animes coming up, like Hakioki Season 2, which actually made me laugh pretty hard, because Hakioki Season 1 was actually not really that good, and this anime was not really that good, so I could sort of see the resemblance.
Yeah, I suppose the writing went for the like female jokes. Did it feel like it was writing from a female who knew that stuff, or did it sound like it was coming from a guy who thought that was females would joke about?
It felt like a guy. Seriously, it did.
I thought so.
Because if it was a girl, I'm pretty sure
it'd be a bit.
I don't know. It could go either way, I think. True. I don't wanna sound wrong here. Because it might be a girl.
Girls can be just as perverted. You just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this anime definitely proved that, so
what I'm gonna review is Sekire, Pure Engagement, the season 2 of the anime. And what that's about is there's this world of mysterious aliens that landed on Earth a while ago, and they're discovered by some students who end up using them for their own entertainment, basically forcing them into this game of a tournament where they're supposed to fight each other to the top. And each of these Sekire have their own little owners where they power
them up. They have their destined person. Owner is a very vague topic.
Well, but they act like servants to the humans.
What are you saying?
I'm just.
Have you seen that one character with the twins?
Yeah.
The biker?
No, I mean he's talking about the electric twins, right?
Oh, the electric twins. Yeah.
Yeah, I see them as like not really a relationship between them two, but those two as his owner. But basically, they have their own partners, and they use like what they can do is these partners can kiss Sekire to power them up and use special powers against other Sekire. And whenever Sekire loses in battle, they basically die. And basically where the season 2 leaves off is they're at the second stage of the tournament. And
don't listen to Dave King, because I don't think you've watched the anime yet. The second stage in the manga is vastly different from the second stage in the anime. Like,
the second stage is actually fighting.
Yeah, the second stage in the manga was this giant tournament to get, like, what are these called? Those little treasures, whatever, where like they had certain Ashikabi or whatever come and fight each other, and the last one alive would get this treasure or whatever, but they totally tossed out the window and didn't even include that.
Yeah, but that wasn't the focus of the season. Basically, yeah. You know, it goes into these other two side characters. Not ones I particularly care about, but
they kind of... You don't care about Homer.
Homer's
not
awesome.
Don't care about...
No, 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 no. Not Homer.
I think he's talking about Uzume.
Yeah, whatever. Uzume and Hiroshikabi. And, yeah, it sidetracks into them, to that kind of storyline. But then it loops up to something a little bit bigger than that. You know, the very ending part, which kind of, like, brought it up, that anime, for me. Because you can see that that plot line was actually moving somewhere. It wasn't just, like, screwing around.
Does this leave on a cliffhanger?
Sort of. I mean, you can tell they're going to have another season. Because this, I mean, this tournament's just barely started. You know, there's like a bunch of Sekire left in the tournament, and you're not sure what else is supposed to go on. You can tell that there's like a lot that they left out, and they're supposed to continue on. You know, it's not going to be finished for a while. I mean, I don't know how far behind it this is from the
dude. Okay, here's what happens. The point in the anime around episode 10 is where the manga is. But the whole anime skipped over an entire arc of the manga. Like they switched two arcs around, kind of. It was weird.
Well, for 13 episodes, you can't really blame them because they have to compress it down to two.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I like they're stripped for time, so I guess they had to rearrange the story to make it leave off on a better place.
Yeah, but what I liked about this season was they did some fights. Pretty good. I mean, they're nothing spectacular, but they're just fine. They're likable. I like the characters, even though like the main character guy is still pretty dense, and he's still too nice. Like,
how can you be dense in this anime, by the way? Because every girl is basically your wife. Well, I don't think he has the choose at all anymore.
He's just too nice. He's like a...
Yeah, he is stupidly nice.
And he's like, why can't we all just get along, you know, when he knows that, like, some of the Sekire have more feelings for him, you know, that really want to be in a relationship with them. But, yeah, they've had pretty likable characters. I would have liked to see
my favorite
day. Yeah.
Tsukuyomi. I'm sorry. I'm a sucker for Sunder's
suit. Tsukuyomi is pretty awesome, honestly.
She's
if it wasn't for Homura, I would love Tsukuyomi.
I don't see what you see in Homura.
I don't see what you see in that alcohol-drinking woman. She's... I don't know. Is it her maturity or something?
I guess so.
I like Homura's bashfulness, and she is very, you know, shy and stuff, and doesn't let out her true feelings. And I like that.
Anyways... The opening ED song's pretty catchy. Speaking of the bad parts of it, I think it fell short in some places. Like, they just moved too quickly, even for 13 episodes. I wish they could have, like, you know, got some more development in some of the story plot lines. The ending was pretty disappointing. I mean, speaking of fight-wise, you know, you can see it was building up to something really big, but it just felt really flat and anticlimactic. And even though they're trying for another season, they could have done so much better. Even especially like since the first season's ending was like pretty well done, I thought, for that big huge battle. And this season's ending was just flat. It was really disappointing.
I really hope it does get a third season though, because I love Sekire, the manga. I love the premise and I love the idea. And I really hope that they can actually get to the good parts in the manga. I hope they actually put in the tournament if they make another season, which would be awesome because Dave would get to see some of the best fights in the entire manga.
But then it seems odd because I'm not sure what they're going to do now. I mean, even like, is a tournament even possible at this point? Because
I don't know. I haven't finished the anime.
I'm just interpreting from what I'm seeing from the ending because it doesn't seem like... it's open game to me.
They'll probably
season.
Wait until the manga gets a lot farther in to make it a third season.
I don't know. this season took quite a long time to get to. I mean, the first season was, I don't know how many years ago. 2008?
I think it was early 2008. No, yeah, it was 2008. It had to be.
So another 2 years for a season, probably. I don't know. But yeah.
Now I think about it, it might have been 2009. Oh, forget it. I'll check.
No,
later.
It's not 2009. But this season was okay. It was just fine. Didn't do anything too, in my terms, too rash. I know people who read the manga are complaining about some particular moment.
I'm the only one complaining. I don't think you
mean Kazahama?
No, he means the spoiler, the big Uzume.
The part where they strayed from the manga.
No, actually, I found out that part actually happens in. Okay, just way later.
What part are you talking
about? I thought I told you this already. Did you read the new Sukiri chapter?
The part where.
It's a big spoiler, King. We can't leave it in the show. Anyways, I give the season a 3.5 out of 5. It was good, but nothing too great. Wait, what?
3.5 translates out to a 7 to me. So,
yeah. Oh, I thought you said a 0.5 out of 5.
Oh. Oh my god, I don't think anything's ever going to get a 0.5 out of 5.
This has been Anime Afterlife Podcast, Episode 6. Thank you for listening.